Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the program of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, as we get you ready for week 12 action in the Southeastern Conference. And Brent, it's not entirely a weekend about SEC play. We have some of those sort of some of those non-conference games that we don't necessarily look forward to this time of year, but still, even some of those for some beleaguered head coaches and programs might be more important than you'd think.
Yeah, some of these teams need a win for either to get into a bowl game or to get a better bowl than they've got or might have. It's going to be a great weekend. 70s and 50s for temperatures, because if it's cool in this area, it's cool pretty much everywhere in the Southeast. So it should be a fun weekend.
Yeah, those cold fronts, they struggle to get through Northeast Florida, it seems like. It seems like Northeast Florida is the last place that cold fronts eventually find their way through. Well, but it does start to feel more like the end of a college football regular season. I'll tell you something else. College football playoff rankings kind of make it feel that way as well. And it was another very interesting release here in the last couple of days with all of the SEC teams. What is it, 9 in the top 25?
Amazing.
You look at just the top 15 or 16 or so, and you're starting to understand where there could be some wailing and gnashing of teeth when we get to Selection Sunday.
You could also see why people are already looking forward to expanding from 12 to 14 to 16.
It'll be 24 by next year.
Yeah, it very well may be. Yeah. Well, it depends on how mad the commissioners are, right, Trav?
That's going to be fascinating to watch. It was a head scratcher in some ways, but understanding still a lot of football left to be played. Although some of these teams like Penn State, you look at Penn State's remainder of the schedule, and it's hard to imagine the Nittany Lions not 11-1. By the end of the regular season. So it will be fascinating to say the least. But let's get into Saturday's action, the Week 12 preview right here on Second Helping, and we'll start things in that noon Eastern time slot. Boy, it seems like Arkansas has lived in this slot a good bit of this season. And the last time we saw Arkansas early, I don't think the alarm clock went off as good for the Razorbacks as it did the Ole Miss Rebels. Arkansas was fed a 60 burger by Lane Kiffin and the Rebels a couple of Saturdays ago. Now here comes Lane's old buddy, Steve Sarkisian. You think Sark watched a lot of that tape, Brent? You think he's got some things in mind for Travis Williams and that Arkansas defense? Boy, Arkansas, we talk about teams trying to get to bowl eligibility. This is an opportunity for the Hogs, although Sam Pittman does have Louisiana Tech in his back pocket for next week.
For your comments, both the offenses are in the top 10. Arkansas is number 5 with almost 500 yards per game, and Texas is 9th. But where the difference is, Trav, Texas only allowing 251 a game. That's 2nd in the nation. Arkansas is 90th at the 387. To your point where, you can see where Sark would be salivating over that. But I will say this, Arkansas despises Texas. I'm sure Texas doesn't have any warm feelings about them. But, Travis, I don't know, frankly, if and certainly from the days gone by.
Southwest Conference days, where Arkansas, I'm afraid, has always felt like the little brother, whether it's the Southwest Conference, whether it's the SEC, right? Just a tough fit for the Razorbacks, wherever they go.
Absolutely. Arkansas needs one more win to be bowl eligible. I don't think they're going to necessarily get it in this game, but it is worth mentioning that that they are that close. They've had a better year, certainly, and certainly want to amend for and make up for giving up nearly 700 yards to Ole Miss. Right now, a lot of teams are going to give up 700 yards to Ole Miss.
Yeah, and the problem for Arkansas defensively, too, is that it felt like Texas got its mojo back a little bit last week. Now, that was a depleted Florida defense as well. But I think, relatively speaking, going to be kind of similar in terms of the challenge for Texas this week, although it will be on the road. And even that, with an 11 a.m. Central kickoff, you know, that shouldn't be an overly boisterous Arkansas crowd, even with hated Texas coming to Fayetteville. But there is some good news for Arkansas. It looks like quarterback Taylen Green is probable. Yes. And Jaquindon Jackson, getting him back, certainly at the running back position, would be a big help, wouldn't it?
If they could just run the ball. And look, they've got a nice bevy of backs this year that has really helped them with. They've had various injuries. But, yeah, Green coming back would be interesting, seeing what Bobby Petrino has cooked up for this game and maybe been holding back a little bit. But again, similar to what Florida went through last week, what you don't want to do with Texas is something we said about Ole Miss. You don't want to have to chase points and get behind 10, 14 to nothing, and then trying to keep up with that, because it can be a long, long day if you do.
Yeah, like Lane, you know, Sark's got those first 20, 25 plays cooked up for you. So it can be 10, 14, nothing quick at Reynolds Razorback Stadium Saturday morning. And from that point, you're right. Arkansas just does not want to be in that situation. Texas gives you so much to defend.
They do.
You know, the running backs are such an integral part of the passing game, but Gunnar Helm at the tight end position, a really tough matchup. Isaiah Bond, you know fully about at the wide receiver position. And look like Ewers kind of got it back a little bit, got back into his thing against the Florida Gators last week. Hey, let's keep it early on Saturday, and let's talk about the Warhawks striving for bowl eligibility. Louisiana Monroe heading to the Plains looking for that sixth win. Auburn really not thinking about that all that much right now. The Tigers continue to be woeful in year two under Hugh Freeze. And so now, you know, the question becomes, can Auburn at least crack the door a little bit where potential bowl eligibility is concerned, again, with an improved ULM team visiting Jordan-Hare on Saturday?
Louisiana Monroe really got off to a nice start, and the wheels have kind of come off, and they're trying to get that back together. You could argue the same thing about Auburn. Trav, do we have a clear understanding about Peyton Thorne and the quarterback situation here? He's got a shoulder injury, and they're kind of rather quiet about this. So I'm sure this is going to be probably questionable or probable. But again, will Hugh Freeze figure out, well, let's just give the ball to Jarquez Hunter about 25 times in this game and see where they go. But listen, Trav, don't they need to come out of this game with some kind of momentum with the schedule remaining with A&M and Alabama?
Auburn just needs a win, however they get at this point in the season. And, you know, we don't have player availability updates for non-conference games. They're only required for conference matchups. So when you talk about Thorne and his situation, you're not going to have that for this game as far as injuries, availability, things like that. So it truly will be something that we'll learn more about as you get into pregame warmups in advance of that matchup on Saturday. Yeah, I think Jarquez Hunter might be one of these guys that goes third, fourth round in the NFL draft, because Hunter, he's going to combine well. He's going to run very well.
I agree.
He looks like a potential every down type of back. Right. Certainly a back in the NFL, if you make better use of him as a receiver, can be a real problem. I think Hunter might be one of those guys in his rookie season that has like 1,000 rushing yards by mid to late November, and everybody goes, what the heck was Hugh Freeze doing with Jarquez Hunter the last 2 years? I could see that with Hunter when he gets to the National Football League. Look, I think Auburn gets the win on Saturday, but still won't be shocked at all if it's a football game there in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely not.
Down on the Plains. Let's talk about Murray State at Kentucky. You talk about a team in desperation mode where bowl eligibility is concerned. Lengthy streak for the Wildcats on the line under Mark Stoops where bowl eligibility is concerned. Going to get one of those wins this week. Murray State's a bad FCS team.
They are.
1-9, I think, at this point, are the Racers. So Kentucky should take care of business this week. They're going to need one, I guess, from either Texas in Austin or Louisville in that rivalry game. I think that game this year in Lexington. So if I were going to say, if I were going to give you a pathway, Brent Beard, for Kentucky to bowl eligibility, obviously it's this week. And then I would probably have to say you would think it would have to come from Louisville to cap the regular season.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I'm concerned about that quarterback situation. Brock Vandergriff left the Tennessee game, got a head injury. We saw some of Rutgers transfer Gavin Wimsett. So that's going to be interested to see kind of where that goes. Wimsett, I understand, has had some packages this season, so that's helped to be able to get him on the field. I tell you, Trev, I like Stoops. I know they've had a difficult year or years, shall we say, and to see them get bowl eligibility would be certainly a feather in his cap and a little bit of momentum. But I can tell you right now, and this is for later, but it's going to be fascinating, Trev, isn't it, to see what Stoops and Kentucky do at the end of the year. Has this become a little stale and both of them need to go their separate ways? Or can they kind of find a spark toward the end and make this a better season than it is now?
Yeah, and in no way is Mark Stoops in any type of jeopardy, as we know. He's done things at Kentucky that simply have never been done before. So very, very safe as Mark Stoops. But I like your point about, you know, sometimes you got to break up the band a little bit. And as much as keeping the band together has been a part of Kentucky's success under Mark Stoops, sometimes you got to shake some things up. You know, Nick Saban, every year, it seemed like, would lose two or three assistants, and everyone would make a big deal about it every year. Mm-hmm. And his answer would be, hey, we like new blood around here. Right. We like new ideas. Now, they were all eventually going to have to be approved by Nicholas Lou Saban himself.
Yes.
But maybe it is at that point for Kentucky football under Mark Stoops. And even in terms of rehires, I mean, we've seen Saban do that too when he was at Alabama. But Eric Wolford coming back as the offensive line coach, you know, offensive coordinator reunions that we've seen with Mark Stoops throughout the year. So something to keep an eye on for sure as we move into the offseason. Hey, let's keep it in that sort of early to mid-afternoon window. The Alabama Crimson Tide, coming off that convincing road win at LSU last Saturday night, will host a really good FCS team in the Mercer Bears. Mercer looking to win a Southern Conference championship under a first-year head coach in Mike Jacobs. That being said, what are the keys for Alabama this week, Bren? Is it as simple as stay healthy, keep this team in moving in a positive direction, because you still have a road game in Norman coming up next Saturday night, and then, of course, the Iron Bowl to cap the regular season?
Yeah, and your point on Mercer is a good one. They're 9-1, number one in their division in defensive interceptions with 21, number one in rush defense, number one in third down defense, number two in turnover margin. So for what they've done, that's been successful. Now listen, I know you've covered a few of these November games with the quote-unquote hapless opponent, and they've had some success because Alabama sleptwalked through some of it. But I think if they are able to keep the ratios for Jalen Milroe less than 20 passes, about 15 runs, something of that nature, seems like it works out well for him. Going to be really interesting, as you talked about earlier this week, who is going to replace Q Robinson and how much success will they be able to have with that. And again, to me, Trav, this is one of those character games, or will their feet be on the ground after a really big convincing win over LSU and all the talk about the playoffs this week and where that's going. And the point needs to be mentioned again, Alabama, the only team in these in the playoff rankings with four wins over ranked teams. So certainly Bama's schedule has helped them immensely, but the key for Saturday is play as many players as you can and stay as healthy as you can.
Yeah, you're right. We talked about the loss of Q Robinson earlier in the week when we reviewed last weekend's games. I think it's big. I think it's also a shame in that this front seven seems to be peaking right now. And really? I'm talking about even some of the defensive linemen that we've seen take a step forward. I thought they were disruptive as a unit. It wasn't just one or two guys. Q Robinson is a part of that. So, you know, Quay Rousseau, Yanze Pierre, next guys up at that wolf position, as they call it these days at Alabama. And then you also had some juggling there in the secondary because Devontae Smith went out of the LSU game from that Husky position, which is pretty much the star, the nickel corner. We saw Deshaun Jones, a transfer from Wake Forest, jump in there. We really hadn't seen him at that position. He's a corner by trade. So some things to continue to rep. You just want to maintain that positive momentum. Yeah, you don't want to go out and just perform to a low standard, because it should take care of itself when you talk about the personnel involved here. And you talk about all those top 25 wins. What's that got Alabama right now? Yeah. The number 10 ranking as a two-loss team. So there are still some things that you need to show, even in a game like this, to make sure, if nothing else, you maintain your position as that number 10 team right now. Gelato checking in here in the show comments. He says, we're here, Roll Tide. Good morning, Gelato.
Good morning.
We welcome each and every one of you here on a live edition of Second Helping to jump in via the show chat. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, hit that subscribe button right now. There's a notification bell right there. If you hit that, you'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops here on Ryer on YouTube. And we're also always appreciative of a thumbs up or a like. So yeah, for Alabama, take care of business on Saturday. Then it'll be a defining two-game run where the college football playoff and really perhaps the SEC championship game too.
Very much.
An appearance there for the Crimson Tide might be on the horizon for first-year coach Kalen DeBoer. Hey, let's get into that 3:30 Eastern matchup on ABC. The forlorn at this point, LSU Tigers, right? After the last couple of performances, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, Nussmeier hasn't been good enough either at the quarterback position. That offense hasn't been good enough over the last six quarters for sure. So now the Tigers take it on the road. Florida, the big news with the Gators, DJ Lagway, his status this week. I think on the latest availability report, he is listed as probable. Got some other Gators that are nicked up or out. So it isn't just about availability where DJ Lagway is concerned for Billy Napier's team, Brent.
Yeah, agree. This is an important game for Florida. They've got LSU and Ole Miss at home. What a tremendous home schedule they've had this year. Kind of like Vanderbilt, frankly, but they just haven't had the team to go along with that schedule. But this LSU team struggling, say the least. I think the stat that really sticks out for me over the last five and a half quarter, the LSU defense allowed 10 rushing touchdowns, seven of them from quarterbacks, Trav. obviously, Jalen Milroe and Marcel Reed. So if the Gators are going to win, they think this might be it. Along with the Florida State win, to win two out of three would be extremely important.
Oh, what they do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that would be the biggest thing. A lot of criticisms this week for Brian Kelly, which is certainly no surprise. All in all, but I still say that the LSU beat writers told us before the year started that this is not the year for them, that they are a year away, particularly with their defensive personnel. So a real opportunity here for the Gators. Should be a great crowd for them. Rex Grossman, Mr. Two Bits, by the way, Trav.
Rexy.
That's right. But again, look, and I know I harp on this a lot. I still think that their offense, regardless of the quarterback, if they, along with these young backs, at Travis. They could get Montrell Johnson back for these next three games, including Saturday, that would make a real difference on that offense.
They can. And a lot of it was Jalen Milroe from the quarterback position for Alabama and certainly Marcel Reed for Texas A&M. Not sure DJ Lagway, with the injury that he's coming off of, is a guy you're going to stress.
No.
With design quarterback runs all that much. So that could be beneficial to LSU. Now, look, the Gators defensively still missing a ton of important pieces, especially on the back end. That was made painfully obvious in Austin last week. So that's a concern. That's where it could be a get-right game for Garrett Nussmeier and his receivers. Even at the linebacker position, you're without Pup Howard now at one of those inside spots. So Montrell Johnson, to your point, listed as questionable. I've got the availability report up here on the screen as we scroll through it. Lagway officially is questionable. Elijah Badger, big part of that.
It really is. And
was without, I guess, Damian George last week in Austin on that offensive line. So, again, it's more than just Lagway for the Gators. And for LSU, we can talk about Garrett Dellinger still being out at the interior offensive line position. That was big, I thought, last week. I thought that was problematic for LSU and that offensive line. But I think it's between the ears for LSU at this point after the way they have been just hammered over the last six quarters, Brent.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. So this is a big game. Obviously, both of these teams, Blake Baker's, who came over from Missouri, getting his share of criticism, but still think that next year you will see some differences for the Tigers. So a big game with a lot of stakes at 3:30 coming up. Yes.
Yeah. A Bo Davis coached defensive line isn't going to look like this one.
No.
You know, it's kind of like when he walked into Texas. And the work he had to do there for Sark. And now look at Texas along that defensive front and in that front seven. If you're an LSU fan, I think you're pretty much aware that it's going to take a year or so to kind of get your group looking like that. So as we continue to move through the slate for Saturday and we get, again, into that late afternoon window, I think this is the Mayor's Cup, right? You got Como versus Cola. I didn't have this one, if I'm being totally honest here. Back in August, I didn't have this as a top 25 matchup on November the 16th. I don't know about you, Brent.
No, I didn't either. Absolutely not. But I think that this game has some significance, frankly. And again, looks like Brady Cook won't play. Drew Pine, who really struggled against Alabama, but then kind of got a second win against Oklahoma and played a lot better. People don't understand sometimes with the playoff talk how important bowl games are to these teams. And particularly for both teams, frankly, for Beamer in South Carolina, who are still trying to build a program, a strong finish would do them a lot of good.
Yeah, with every win, if you're South Carolina, it enhances your chances of being in Florida.
No doubt.
In bowl season, whether it's maybe Tampa. Who knows? You could climb as high as maybe Orlando, but certainly Jacksonville has been a South Carolina stronghold.
It has.
In previous years, I don't think either of those parties would have a problem with the Gamecocks back in the Gator Bowl once again. But, yeah, this just feels like if it's pine time again for Mizzou, which it's looking like that very well could be the case, hard not to like South Carolina. Now, as we talked about here on the program, South Carolina has really been better on the road than they've been at home. They've been borderline dominant on the road. Now, not against the likes of Texas or Georgia or teams like that, but – even Alabama, the Gamecocks played the Crimson Tide off its feet in Tuscaloosa in its lone loss in SEC play on the road. And look, from a health perspective, South Carolina looks to be in pretty good shape and know more and more exactly who they are, Brent, with Lenore Sellers behind center.
Oh, yeah. And he improves all the time. But I tell you, Trav, to me, The big key for the whoever plays South Carolina is, can you block Kyle Kennard and Dylan Stewart? That's what you and I've learned over the years. Listen, there are two things here that have been phenomenal for them, or actually three. One would be the consistent play of those edge rushers. And the other two, I think they're combined, is a healthy Rocket Sanders and also Sellers growing up and maturing. Boy, if those continue to happen, that they really could have an end of the year.
Yeah, Rocket's looked much more like a Rocket.
He really has, hasn't he?
The previous year or so at Arkansas, it wasn't very Rocket resemblant to me when I watched Rocket Raheem Sanders with the football in his hands, but he's been exactly what that team has needed. It's interesting because I thought Spencer Rattler was exactly what that team needed at quarterback. Yeah. You wondered about quarterback this year. Lenore Sellers, I'm telling you, I'm buying into Lenore Sellers more and more, especially with the way South Carolina is playing offense now. And you just keep getting him a back like a Rocket Sanders moving forward. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have a chance with Beamer to be a 7-8 win team. Now, we know South Carolina goes through some peaks and valleys where personnel are concerned. Mm-hmm. They've caught it, like you said, especially at those defensive end positions and really the front seven in general in 2024. Hey, let's get into primetime, the one we are anticipating the most on Saturday. Tennessee, ranked 7th in the latest college football playoff rankings, traveling to number 12 Georgia. It's weird this year. We've talked about Alabama as kind of a number 12 team at times, maybe even number 15 at times. And now to say 12th ranked Georgia, right?
Yeah, really.
Just not accustomed to using that type of descriptive where rankings are concerned with Kirby Smart's team.
The thing that's really disturbing for them or the problems that they are having offensively. Now, obviously, Carson Beck is really struggling. And I'm curious what you're seeing there, Trav. I see some bad footwork. He's not seeing the field real well. He's getting fooled some by the secondaries. The other things that have really added up are the number of I won't say they're decimated, but they've had multiple injuries on the offensive line. They're thin in the running back situation. I love the Frazier kid and what he's done. ETN has been banged up too. But something I never thought I would see is, Trav, the Georgia wide receivers lead the nation in drop passes.
Yeah, we've gotten on Carson Beck pretty good, and I think he's deserving of his portion of the finger pointing at this point. But quarterback play is largely about trust, man. Sure. And when you don't trust your protection, and by Georgia standards, this Georgia offensive line is subpar.
Yes.
And some of that has to do with the injuries and the in and out nature, where those positions, especially the interior, has been concerned, whether you're talking about center or guard. But they're not good enough. They're not up to their standard at tackle either.
No, absolutely not.
They don't have those kind of guys. So you're wondering about your protection. Then when you are at the right place at the right time with the football, your guys aren't catching it. And it's been amazing in a lot of ways. And I think, Carson's not exactly adept at sort of hiding those things with his body language and his eyes and things like that. Those are the things that pop out as much as anything to me. But this is a circle the wagons game, classic circle the wagons game for a program like Georgia. We've seen it in the past with teams like Alabama that are very similar to Georgia and kind of getting written off. And, here comes Tennessee, who I've said this week here on the channel, feels like Tennessee's never left Knoxville this season. I guess, you went to Charlotte right up the street and crushed NC State. And this isn't a long road trip in terms of proximity to Knoxville, but we did see what happened to the Vols when they got into a primetime hostile, semi-hostile environment in Arkansas, and it did not go well at all. So this is a prove-it game for Tennessee in a multitude of ways, because the expectation is for Georgia to kind of, things haven't been good, but we'll still get the job done somehow, some way. at home. And there's questions, obviously, about Nico and his health going through concussion protocol. We've heard from some folks who early in the week were already calling him out for the game. We've heard from Josh Heupel, who says, oh, no, he's in great shape.
Yeah.
Play Saturday night. But ultimately, it's going to be guys like Dylan Sampson and that defense that probably going to have to get it done for the Vols on Saturday night.
Yeah. And can Georgia block James Pierce?
Yeah.
And
I don't think they can.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But I tell you, Trav, if your quarterback is banged up and he is limited, if you can, if all you got to do is lean on your SEC leading rusher running back and Dylan Sampson and that defense, that's not a bad place to be either. Another stat that I had to look twice at, Trav, Georgia's 104 out of 134 in rushing offense.
It's amazing. I think Trevor Etienne is Georgia's leading rusher, and he doesn't have 500 yards.
Right. On the season. Yes.
Amazing. I mean, when you see that stat associated with Georgia football, and some years it's been by committee, okay? So I get it. Maybe your leading rusher has 650, but the second leading guy's got 500 at least.
Oh, yeah.
Georgia just, and not good enough at tight end either.
No.
You know,
No.
Everybody looks at the Brock Bowers departure and just equates it to playmaking and receiving, and that's huge. Don't get me wrong. But Brock Bowers would block your ass, too.
He sure would.
You know, and, boy, I watch some of these Georgia tight ends in one-on-one situations, especially for what Mike Bobo is asking them to do. Alabama's tight ends, Mason Taylor for LSU, those guys, I watch them. They get it done
in
the run game. But Georgia's, it's an extension of that offensive line play. It's not been pretty from what I've seen so far. So how many points do you think in this game Saturday night? I mean – I don't know what the total is. I need to look at that. But if somebody told me it was like 38 and a half for this game, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because I think Tennessee in terms of a matchup for that Georgia defense right now, I think it works out well for Georgia, because I don't think Nico's going to hurt them in ways that Jackson Dart hurt them or Jalen Milroe hurt them earlier in the season.
Will the Georgia staff go home this week, Trav, or will they sleep in the offices? A lot of people are thinking about, well, you know, this is one of those automatic games where Kirby finds a way to win, and they, as you said, they circle the wagons and they have the best performance of the whole year with their guys. But from your point, and I agree with you, I normally would think that, would it shock me that happened? No, if they rose up and played their best game of the year. But I tell you, with all we've seen so far, the evidence is just not there at this point for a resounding win. That may certainly get some energy from being at home in this game, but boy, there are a lot of question marks where this Georgia team is right now.
Yeah, this one could come down to a kick, and I think both teams feel pretty good about that. I think especially Georgia in that scenario, and that's maybe what it comes down to. We talk about punters and kickers on this program. A lot of places don't, but I think the duos for both these teams are pretty good. I think Georgia's duo is elite.
Yeah, I agree.
Punting,
I agree with that.
Place kicking, that duo is as good as you'll see in all of college football. Gelato checking in here again in the show chat says, we all know UGA and Bama are top 10 teams, just playing on the road in the SEC is a different animal. There's no doubt about it. And that's where, where I come up a little bit short with Tennessee this week, because the last time I really saw Tennessee on the road, I mean, yes, they played at Oklahoma too. That wasn't an earth shattering performance from the Vols. They gutted it out to their credit early in the season when Oklahoma wasn't completely sort of coming apart at that point. But it's definitely different. And I think Georgia also this week, Brent, has an opportunity to obviously help itself where the college football playoff is
concerned.
But with a win over Tennessee, might help push Alabama into that conference championship game with two losses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you think, well, what if Alabama loses the conference championship game, gets a third loss, even with the head to head over Georgia? I won't go too far into those scenarios.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Hey, I did want to throw something out at you real quick. Georgia beat writer I talked to made the statement, Georgia really misses Will Muschamp when it comes to making adjustments in that secondary. I'm curious.
You brought in Travaris Robinson from Alabama, who, you know, was thought to be at the time a huge loss for Alabama. Not going to be able to replace T-Rob. I don't know. I mean, you've got Lanning's been around forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Not Lanning. Glenn Schumann. I mean, it's like Alabama coordinators. I still get them mixed up.
Yeah, you know, I understand.
All kind of the same guys, but
yeah, really.
That's sort of with Malachi Starks back, and some of those guys that they had. I know they lost Lassiter to the NFL draft and some guys too, but you kind of expect Georgia at this point to be in sort of reload mode on the back end of that defense. So with Tennessee at Georgia out of the way, that takes us to the nightcap. The Diego-less New Mexico State Aggies, and I think it's shown up in the Aggies' record, the migration of that quartet of key pieces from New Mexico State to Vanderbilt during the offseason. This New Mexico State team is not that New Mexico State team from the last year or so. But the Aggies, battle of Aggies here, Texas A&M and New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M trying to maintain momentum, especially after that win over LSU a couple weekends ago. A&M, even though they sit there at number 15 right now in the rankings, after that disappointing loss at South Carolina the last time we saw this team, still has really everything in its control. Yeah. Because you look at A&M and even LSU to an extent, and you look at LSU and you go, up, three-loss team. Well, one of those is a non-con, you know, and you look at A&M as a two-loss team. Well, one of those was a non-con to Notre Dame. So A&M Texas still has a very real chance to be for a spot in the Southeastern Conference Championship game.
Oh, yeah. And in that humongous Texas game coming at the end of the year in College Station, A&M at 33 of 34 red zone opportunities, including 25 touchdowns. So that's 97%, good for second in the nation. And we've talked about this some, and I think this is going to be crucial going down the line. I mean, after losing Reuben Owens, running back, Le'Veon Moss, and they've got some good ones, Amari Daniels, E.J. Smith. As you mentioned before, Marcel Reed obviously is one of their better runners too, but Trevor, should there be more concern maybe about this running back situation as they near some incredibly crucial games for them at the end of November?
Well, Moss and Daniels complemented each other so well because Moss would run you over too.
Yeah,
like he had a physicality to him. Daniels isn't what I would say timid, but he's not that guy.
Yeah.
So you've lost some of that. And Marcel Reed isn't a Cam Newton type of runner at the quarterback position, but that's where Marcel Reed becomes even more important when you lose a back like Le'Veon Moss because of what he can give you in the run game to go along with Smith and Daniels. So, you know, I still think it's an A&M team that can get the job done. You said it earlier. Got an Ag Cup matchup with Auburn coming up in a couple Saturdays. And, of course, the game everyone's going to be pointing to when Texas visits College Station on the final Saturday of the regular season. But, yeah, for A&M, it's an opportunity to kind of had the bye week. I think that bye week came at the perfect time for A&M.
Sure because,
they look like a team by the end of that South Carolina game, definitely needed it. So we'll see what that's done for Mike Elko's team. And again, New Mexico State at 2-7 this season after the departures of Kill and Pavia and Beck and Stowers to Vanderbilt. It's been a tough one. Should be a pretty much feel good evening for the Texas A&M Aggies. Brent, with that, you got anything else for us before we get out of here on a Thursday morning?
Yeah, two last things. And number one, Pavia trying to get another year. How in the world could you deny Pavia another year with what he's done for college football? And on a more serious note, Trav, John Robinson of USC, yeah. Notre Dame's Jerry Faust, two big names, unfortunately, passed this week. Wanted to give some prayers and condolences for their family. And I particularly remember John Robinson and the job that he did at Southern Cal, which was very impressive. So couple guys, you know, some of our younger folks may not remember them, and I understand that. But particularly Robinson, a legendary name at Southern Cal.
It was interesting, too, because late in his life, he worked as sort of a consultant to LSU with Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, in fact,
based on the story I read, I think Coach Robinson passed away in Baton Rouge. I think he was still living there. And absolutely not just a really good college coach, the LA Rams, a couple times he took to NFC championship games. And boy, Jerry Faust, that was, even for that time, that was amazing to see a high school head coach.
It really was. Oh,
become the head coach at Notre Dame. And unfortunately, it went the way I think a lot of people thought it would.
Right.
But you're right. Two coaches that had faced off against each other, too, in those jobs at Notre Dame and Southern California, respectively. I think both were 89 years old.
Yeah, that's right. So, they were.
Parallels to be drawn between those coaches, for sure. Anything else, Brent? We got our guy, Tex Tider. Tex, you're late. Hope you got a note. Better be a doctor's note, Tex. He says, as we like to remind everybody, thumbs up if you can for us. That would help us out. Anything, Brent, before we
Travis, we go out, plug your YouTube channel. You're doing some great work on there. And I know Pops makes an appearance every now and then, correct?
Well, I caught Pops Saturday. I went over and kind of surprised him at the Pops Casa, and he was not watching his Gators.
Caught him not watching
Florida and Texas. He was watching Tech and Miami, which I don't blame him. I mean, that was the better game, no doubt about it. I go over there, he didn't even have the Gator game on. So anyway, that's Pops these days. Hey, Hattie May checking in, says, love y'all, man. We love you too, Hattie May. Great show. We appreciate that as well, Hattie May. And again, if you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, take the time right now, hit that subscribe button. If you see that notifications bell, hit that as well. You'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops. We got a program coming up later tonight on the program live, so you'll want to hang in there with that. A new show coming to Ryer on YouTube tonight. Should be a lot of fun. That'll go at 9 Eastern and 8 Central right here on the channel. And again, the likes, we love the likes, you guys and gals. We appreciate those as well. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, hoping you have a great and safe weekend out there. And until next time, so long, everybody.